And Neil just did a debate of his own on the Matt Beal podcast right here with Dan Richards, the buffoon or clown, as we call him on this channel. Do you mind if I actually start with this Easter Island clip? Because it just rambling and whatever Dan is. It just sounds like some college kid, like just rambling. Here, let me pull it up.
Yeah.
We're definitely in contact with both, and their legends say that they were looking for this place. Their king was
I don't think I started. Here we go.
Where the oldest habitable layer on Easter Island shows foods from both the old and the new world.
That is absolutely not true. Absolutely false. It absolutely does not. But whatever, if he wants to claim that, he can lie.
A big reason that I started this channel is the irritation that I feel when I see these fake skeptics and wannabe debunkers using arguments that are emotional, that are ignorant, that are appeals to authority, that are basically not contributing to the discussion whatsoever. But they think this is okay because they're not engaging in a discussion. They're fighting flat earthers in their own mind.
It is. But I do agree with you that we need to be tackling more than just that, because I think, at least from my view of pseudo-archaeology, is it's a major vector into this world of distrust of experts. It's
100%.
And with pseudo-archaeology in particular, what really annoys me is the media accepts it completely. So it brings in books as if they are real, rather than them being pseudoscience. They're put in the archaeology section of bookstores, right? And so, and what that means, but they're filled with all this rhetoric that's anti-experts, anti-scholars, anti-intellectuals. So it's feeding people this kind of rhetoric very knowingly, and it acts as kind of, I think, a gateway to more subversive conspiracies that will lead people to not getting vaccines for their kids, or to not actually trying to tackle climate change.
And the end result of this kind of nonsense is these PhDs are having a hard time keeping up with GEDs like myself, because I actually care about this stuff. In 2024, a paper was published titled Identification of Breadfruit and South American Crops Introduced During Early Settlement of Rapa Nui as Revealed Through Starch Analysis. What I said on Limitless with Matt Bell was spot on. To quote from the paper's abstract, analysis of 46 starch grains recovered from 20 obsidian tools from the earliest dated level of the Anakena site on Rapa Nui provides direct evidence for translocation of traditional crop plants at initial stages of colonization of this island. Our results identify taxons previously unknown to have been cultivated on the island, such as breadfruit, ginger. Our study provides direct evidence for translocation of a set of traditional Polynesian and South American crop plants at the initial stages of the colonization in Rapa Nui. To Flint, what I'm saying sounds like I'm rambling, because I'm actually a history junkie and he's not. All right? He's a debunker. He doesn't care. He doesn't look this stuff up for fun. If he is looking into this stuff for fun, it's rubbing his hands with glee about how he's going to get Graham Hancock or Jimmy Corsetti or somebody. And this is a great example. I am so happy that he did this live stream with Neil after our debate, because I haven't seen proof like this for a long time, just how blatantly open these guys are full of crap. And as a quick aside, for those of you that think Flint didn't lie on the debate with Graham Hancock on the Joe Rogan Experience, watch the way he handles himself here. Hi, my name's Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. I recently had a debate on Limitless with Matt Bell, and the unfortunate victim was Neil Senlac of the Gnostic Informant channel. And in the aftermath of that, he went on the Flint Dibbles channel, and they whined and cried, and Flint talked about how stupid I am, and it was so pathetic and just so uninformative and so ironic that, you can't make some of this stuff up. So let's just dive on into it.
They covered a range of topics, Göbekli Tepe pyramids, Baalbek. Mostly the pyramids was the real core of it. And it's like a
supposed to be. They changed up the format last second, which I was a little disappointed about.
So we got to get into that, because I think that's a key thing. And we can talk about the differences between our debate prep strategies and how it went down, because I think that's an important thing for people to recognize when you engage with pseudoscientists.
Now, the first thing I want to make note of is the level of hate that I get from the archaeological community. And that's really because I exposed Flint's lies on the Graham Hancock debate that he had on Joe Rogan. And ever since then, there's a good number of archaeologists, and especially the Twitter warriors, they just hate me. And that's exactly where Neil went to get support and help for his debate from. So it's no surprise that they don't know what the fuck they're talking about, because they are just concerned with emotional anger and Dan sucks. It doesn't really have anything to do with honesty or truth or integrity. I mean, Flint openly says he hates me.
Sorry, Matt. I have some respect for Matt.
Me actually, too. Dan. I have
zero respect for Dan, but I have a little bit of respect. I have some respect for Matt. Oh, I love Matt.
But that's just because of videos like this one right here. This also does come with a pile of those other trolls, like I said.
I got to say, I think you and James Lindsay are the only two people that I really interact with that come with their own little, like, army of trolls behind you. I interact with you, I can expect all these people to sort of tell me why I'm a piece of shit for interacting with you. It's kind of, it's interesting because yours are archaeologists.
You know, a lot of people might be upset by this and be like, man, it sucks having all these professional archaeologists talking crap about me and just hating on me. And, you know, if I say something, they misconstrue it. And that helps people prepare for debates behind the scenes so they can beat me up and make me look bad. And but I'm on the other side of it. I'm like, you all help prepare Neil, come out there to get his clock cleaned. And then we see the way that Flint talks about this stuff here, and you'll see that, well, Neil would have been better off watching a PBS special where they sing Baby Shark every 5 minutes as opposed to going to Flint, because at least the Baby Shark special won't misinform you.
Neil had mentioned to me and other scholars that he was doing this debate. I think you mentioned you talked to Therese Aussie, archaeologist. Who else did you talk to?
Yeah, give a shout out to them, actually. There's a few people who I reached out to in the weeks leading up to the debate, just asking them, hey, this is what I think. Am I right about this? What do you think about this? What do you think about this? Justine, that woman, Warren, that's the name of her handle.
She's right here.
go and subscribe. There she is. Average Aussie Egyptologist. She gave me hours of her time to even jump on a call with me and talked about this stuff. So I really, really want to shout out to Average Aussie Egyptologist. Also, Joseph Wilson was going back and forth with me as well. A few others too, but those three in particular were very, very helpful.
And not only do I get to laugh at these clowns, but this mentality shows why they lost the debate. You got a false sense of my position because you go to a bunch of haters that don't like me. What do you mean? What does his following feel about this? Duh! My following feels like this is the way that it should be, because my followers know that this is how Dan operates. He's not like, I think it must have been the ninth degree. I've been saying for a very long time, baby steps. When I was on Joe Rogan, I told him flat out, I'm not opposed to ancient high technology, but you've got to get me there. This isn't new, but it is new if you get your information about me from people like Dave Farina or from Flint Dibble.
And so, in a sense, Neil did his homework on the pyramids to be able to talk about the pyramids, which is what you do when you prepare for a debate. You do your homework, right?
People use that against you. People use that against you. You're appealing. You're appealing to the consensus. That's what we're supposed to do. There's no way you can't escape. You can't escape appealing to academia to some degree. Even the pseudos are doing. The pseudos go, oh, here's what academia says. Based on that, I think this, and they just go.
Exactly.
The difference between relying on the data gathered by a professional and their interpretation of this data is drastic. I mean, come on, you're talking about the difference between accepting that the carbon dating is accurate or accepting that a narrative that's forged around the carbon dating is accurate, or allowing that narrative to push other narratives off of the playing field. This is three different things, man, and I think we all can see the difference here, but you're conflating all of them together. What happens when you get the latter, okay, when you get your Clovis first, when you get your positions like that, is you get a very unscientific environment, as archaeologist Tom Dillahay says.
Considering what took place in terms of the dialogue and all the back and forth that happened, is that what you would have expected from the scientific process?
There were several other unpleasant things. So the whole sociology of the non-scientific part of that enterprise was disturbing at times and made me reveal that there's a small, not a majority, but a minority of people who will do anything in their power to defend their paradigm.
Spoiler alert. This guy may come up again.
And so, in a sense, you were told this would be on the pyramids. We talked a little bit beforehand. I shared a few things. Other people shared some things. And then, boom, this is what it ended up being. Introductions, Younger Dryas for 13 minutes, astrological symbolism for half an hour, pyramid dating for, what, an hour, well, that was the key thing that you prepared for. Yeah. And then Sphinx dating for 25 minutes, Baalbek stones for... what, I don't know, like 20 minutes, Ganung Padang for 5 minutes, and then Is Archaeology a Science for about 15 minutes. And so, you know, it obviously was a very different debate than what you had prepped for. And as I told you when I was listening to it yesterday, like the parts that were unprepared, it just sounded to me like, I don't know, two dudes in a college dorm room, meaning Matt and Dan.
First of all, Flint doesn't really keep up with this stuff. I mean, as we saw in the intro, he doesn't really follow it when new data comes out, and he doesn't really know the old data. He doesn't really know much about this at all, but he knows he doesn't like it, or like me. And this dovetails with my second point. Do you see this pic here? These were the positions that Neil and myself both declared before the debate. Neil knew ahead of time that my position is not that the pyramids are tens of thousands of years old. Now, what's more, Neil could have declined these other topics, insisting on sticking to the pyramids proper. You know, the topics he knows something about. This is hilarious, considering what started a debate between us. These posts right here. Do you see how he claims I know basically nothing about this stuff? Man, it kind of sucks to be Gnostic informant right now. I mean, we were there talking about this, and on the fly, I was getting my details accurate. And then these guys discuss it after preparing for a live stream, and they still can't get their details in order. Man, yeah, that's a pretty good position you got there. I wonder which one of us has the Wikipedia 101 levels of knowledge.
Do you mind if I actually start with this Easter Island clip? Because it just rambling and whatever Dan is. It just sounds like some college kid, like just rambling. Here, let me pull it up.
Yeah.
We're definitely in contact with both, and their legends say that they were looking for this place. Their king was
I don't think I started the game. Here we go.
Where the oldest habitable layer on Easter Island shows foods from both the old and the new world.
That is absolutely not true. Absolutely false. It absolutely does not. But whatever, if he wants to claim that, he can lie.
All right, let's dig into this. Anakena is the site on Easter Island that has the lowest habitable layer that we are aware of. It's the oldest archaeological site that we've found. It's around 1,000 to 1,200 years old. Basically what I said in my ramblings.
The oldest habitable layer on Easter Island shows...
And the site has yielded many artifacts. To return again to the paper from the intro, Anakena is one of the few sites on the island with deep and well-stratified cultural deposits with evidence of extensive use. The numerous investigations that have been carried out in Anakena have allowed to date and characterize the different occupational phases, making this the earliest dated settlement on the island. The availability of the obsidian tool collection from the bottom stratum of this site offered an ideal archaeological context to answer the question of the initial plant inventory. Now, the obsidian tools are where the starch grains were sourced, and of these, the ones that were found in Asia, like ginger and breadfruit, these were the ones that they didn't expect to find in Easter Island. The unexpected findings of three species, i.e. breadfruit, Tahitian apple, and ginger, not previously recorded for Rapa Nui, require some discussion. The presence of breadfruit starch on the tools from Anakena provides the first evidence that this species was introduced to Easter Island as part of the colonizing strategy. It probably survived and grew for several generations before disappearing. Now, ginger is the most interesting of these, in my opinion, due to its uses that we are aware of going well back into prehistory. Ginger was one of the first oriental spices to reach the Greeks and Romans about 2,000 years ago, was known in France and Germany since the 9th century, England since the 10th century, and reached Scandinavia only in the 15th century. However, information about its eastward spread is scant. Kaul Shal state that ginger is one of the traditional medicinal plants that have been used for over 2,000 years by Polynesians to treat diabetes, cancer, and many other diseases. The finding of four archaeological starch grains identified with high probability, 90%+, as ginger on three obsidian tools is, to our knowledge, the first evidence that this species was introduced to Easter Island during early settlement. So pretty much needless to say at this point, Flint is wrong, And the irony of him calling me confidently wrong as he is confidently wrong is really, it's the inception of wrongness, Flint.
So these guys were definitely in contact with both. And their legends say that
definitely they were in contact with both. Hold on a second. Pause real quick.
Yeah.
That when I heard that, I immediately kind of cringed a little bit, because when you say definitely, you can't, that language is like, so you're saying everyone's been wrong forever except for you. When you say something like that, definitely, they definitely had then where's all the papers about this then? How are you the only guy that knows this?
Well, Neil, I'm glad you asked. Here's the papers. We have 2024's paper, Ancient Rapa Nui Genomes Reveal Resilience and Pre-European Contact with the Americas, that was published in Nature, which was actually a follow-up on a 2014 paper, Genome-Wide Ancestry Patterns in Rapa Nui Suggest Pre-European Admixture with Native Americans, which was published in Current Biology. Get ready for a bombshell, Mr. Wikipedia 101 Levels of Knowledge. If you want to find something, you have to look for it first.
This is why my thumbnail for this says that he's confidently wrong, because that's how he is. He's very, very confident with very his confident. Wrongness. And
And it works for him. It works for him. The comments, like, oh, Dan brought the evidence So sometimes just being confident goes a long way in this world.
No, it's a real problem. And that's why we call it a con artist, right?
Yeah.
My, how the turntable table turns. Insert Michael Scott thing here. I'm just fucking.
Their king was like, had a dream. He knew this place was there. And this is where you could get into, you know what Axis Mundi is, right? Like, okay, world naval. Every world naval is located smack dab in the center of that culture. Delhi, a Wailing Wall. All this stuff, except for Easter Island. If you're part of that culture, if you're part of the Polynesian culture, that is like the farthest flung corner you could go to have your world navel, unless the sea levels were lower. As Matt pointed out the first time I was here, if you lower the sea levels, all of a sudden Easter Island looks extremely centrally located in all of the islands. As a matter of fact, it's like the last waypoint before you jump across the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. It's like the
This is so not true. If you look at where Easter Island is, it is in the middle of the ocean. It's not in the middle of any islands. Even if the sea level was lower, it would still not be in the middle of the Pacific Islands. It would be much closer to South America, for example, than most of the Polynesian islands that we think of.
Once again, the guy's just talking out his ass. I even said, as Matt said last time I was here, do you think I would lie to Matt Bell's face about what he said to me last time I talked to him? Come on, man. Look at this topographic map of the Pacific Ocean, and then look at this ridge that I mistakenly called the Mid-Atlantic Ridge because I'm an idiot, and see how Easter Island is exactly as I described it. The last island in a chain before the longest leg of the journey. How easy it must be to do the job of this Mr. Debunker Flint guy. I mean, you just pick a position, lie about it, make up the facts you want, puff your chest and beat it and say, I know best because I have the credentials next to my name, even though I didn't study anything about this. And clearly this person actually retains more knowledge than me, even though they smoke a lot of the devil's lettuce. Maybe they do actually know something more than Flint does. We'll see in a second what he does when he recognizes that in real time. It's pretty funny.
So,
and what's the dating on when they got there? Do you know by offhand or no?
It's like something like 1200, 1300 AD.
So it's like we're already in the late medieval period. We're almost near the Renaissance at that time, dude. Like, what is the contact? Well, this would be in the sources.
Now, what he's muddling up here is some real stuff, which is that there is now evidence for contact between the Polynesians and South Americans, but we're talking like 1300 AD, something like that. We're talking
not 10,000 BC, Younger Dryas. This is the talk about Younger Dryas period.
Yeah.
Right? So why are we talking about 1200 AD shit then?
You're exactly right. This is in this early segment of the debate that should be talking about Younger Dryas and ancient civilizations and stuff like that. And
it's confusing. Yeah.
No, I am not trying to say that this is from 10,000 or 12,000 or 100,000 years ago. I'm talking about there being a connection, about a belief in this site being an old world naval, an old sacred site. I know to you guys it's impossible to believe that people could remember things going back thousands of years. It's almost like I know who Ra is, or Osiris, or Khufu, or any of these people. It's crazy. But at any rate, some of us believe that people would have remembered their old ancestral holy grounds and, like their myths say, looked for it. And you know what? According to geologist Robert Schock, who's the same guy who talked about the weathering patterns on the Sphinx, well, according to him, there's some of the moai there looked to have been covered in the erosion from the ground over the course of like 30,000 years. There's basalt moai that are in situ that seem to have been like left, like they were carving them thinking they were made of that volcanic tuff that's not so hard. They reach a harder stone and they leave it. But there's other basalt moai that aren't left, that are fully carved and all embellished and whatnot too. So there is some interesting things about Easter Island that do point towards it being settled a couple of different times. This is what I was referring to, and I know it's complicated. I know it's tricky to keep up with this kind of stuff. But if you pay attention, this was the astrological symbolism section, not the Younger Dryas section. It's like I'm arguing with Lenny and Squiggy. I swear on my milk and Pepsi. Oh, wait. And what was that you said?
Now, what he's muddling up here is some real stuff, which is that there is now evidence for contact between the Polynesians and South Americans. But we're talking like 1300 AD, something like that.
Not 10,000 BC, Younger Dryas. This is the talk about Younger Dryas period.
But did you catch what just happened there? Flint was looking it up in the stream, in the middle of it, and realized, oh man, Grok's telling me that I got this wrong. ChatGPT says Dan was right. Well, I could backpedal and say, you know what? Sorry, man. When I was making fun of Dan earlier, that was my own mistake. We should learn from that. I screwed up. Sorry, guys. I was wrong. That's what somebody with the basic levels of integrity would do. But what Flint does is proves exactly what I said about him in the debate with Graham Hancock almost 2 years ago. Now, he lies. He just doubles down. He can't bear to have his ego challenged. He can't be wrong. Absolutely can't be wrong. So instead, he just pretends. He just pretends. And he corrects Neil kind of sort of. And now they're just going to go with this new narrative. La-di-da-di-da. Like it's like I didn't just teach the man something about archaeology that he didn't know.
It's just, and this is what I mean, he just rambles and he just pieces together random stuff.
Longest John, there makes a lot of sense that there were people there. I don't think they had power tools, but I think this is a great
good point.
That leading to either power tools or it's bullshit. They had power tools or it's complete bullshit. I think that's really missing the middle ground in that these guys,
you know what?
There were complicated people that existed just back then. They did a lot more.
I was surprised. I'm wondering what most of his audience thought about this performance, because constantly throughout the debate, he's agreeing with me that the pyramids are Old Kingdom, not 10,000 BC, let alone 25,000 BC, which he was on an appearance with Randall Carlson recently, where that was the topic. And he's saying there's no power tools, there's no secret advanced technology. So if they're watching this, aren't they going, oh no, this is bad? Right.
Well, so Dan's playing this game, which a lot of pseudo archaeologists do. And I've covered this before on other live streams with other people, where what they try to do is they try to say, I'm more credible than these other people who are more crackpotted.
Sure.
And so, you know, you see Jimmy Corsetti do this all the time. He gets into arguments on Twitter with Giorgio Tsoukalos. And he basically says, oh, how could you believe in ancient aliens type stuff? My view of power tools at Giza is much more realistic. And so, you know, and so Dan.
I love the aliens at that point.
Dan is kind of funny because, like, he is really wishy-washy. If you follow his channel, I've watched way too many of his videos. He doesn't like to come down very strongly on any one thing or another. He likes to kind of play around the edges and not say anything concrete. That's- and the way that he makes himself sound plausible is by saying, I'm not as crazy as these other crackpots. I'm not suggesting power tools and whatnot. Yeah.
Now, this is hilarious. Neil, I've been like this since my earliest videos. I debunked Electric Pyramids my first year on YouTube. I even debunked Graham Hancock on numerous things. Hell, here's a clip of Graham Hancock and me together on stage from a little over a year ago in Sedona, Arizona.
So, Dan has become a dear friend in the last year. Dan runs a most unusual YouTube channel called Dedunking. But I also regard you as highly objective because you've criticized my work too. You know.
Yeah, it's. Thank you. I try not to be a butt about it, but if
look at that, Graham showing a level of integrity these two couldn't muster if they bought it on TMU. All right, look. I don't know anything for certain about our past, and that is the difference between us, okay? I recognize that biases will make it harder for me to know for sure what happened. I recognize that we've had multiple times in the last 100 years that we have had cock blocking happening because of ideological reasons, like not the evidence holding up an idea, it's the idea holding back the evidence. This has happened more than once in archaeology, in the story of our past, in very recent times. I mean, look, do I get to call something a hypothesis if it's not testable, if it's not repeatable? What if I write a story? Do I get to call it a hypothesis then if I attach some carbon dating to it and whatnot? I mean, this is not, okay. There's a huge difference between the science side of what y'all are doing and the non-science side. And when you conflate the two, you make the, this is where the public loses faith in science, is when it sees the professionals or the people that are the advocates for the scientific community conflating ideas and actual science. The public's a lot smarter than y'all seem to think. In case you can't notice right now why you have to pull my GED work boot out of your freaking white tacky butthole. White tacky butthole.
The weeks leading up to the debate, I gave a clear position to Matt of what my position is. I said the pyramids were built by Khufu and his sons. Here's my position. And Dan's position was, I don't have a position. I just think scholars are wrong. So yeah. How do you even have... Whatever, I agreed to it though, but like that was what we were. That's what we were doing.
Neil claimed I didn't know shit. He said that I had a Wikipedia 101 levels of knowledge and that I didn't think like a normal person because I dared question what the experts had to say. Replacing the knowledge of guys like these two don't look shit up yet claim to know the consensus of the experts is apparently problematic. Now my position for the debate was clear. We do not know for sure when the pyramids were built. And the opinion that we do blocks us from figuring it out. This is not a non-position, and Neil's opinion that I don't know crap and that we therefore need to defer to the experts, well, it's something he had to backpedal on a little bit and say, well, hang on, what I'm saying is you personally have a Wikipedia 101 level of knowledge, Dan, which is something that I think we soundly have put to bed here, if not before. Again, I do this weird thing where I read stuff. It's crazy.
But you hear this all the time that scholarship is just there to keep the status quo. And I think it's the exact opposite.
I wouldn't say that it's there to keep the status quo, but I would say that, like we saw it with Clovis first, and for the people that think that that's just a one-off, man, you go.
We saw it with Clovis first. So I recommend everybody go and check out the live stream I just did 2 days ago with Tom Dillahay. And here, wait, I have this clip.
Civilization. If we could call this up on the screen, Jamie.
There's Tom at the top. He's the director of excavation.
The Society for American Archaeology, of which Flint is a member, wrote an open letter to
Illuminati.
Netflix shortly after the release of my show, Ancient Apocalypse, really asking Netflix to cancel the show. Not to cancel it, this is quite cleverly put. They said they said reclassify it as science fiction. Now to my
That's
mind
a lot different than cancer, by the way.
It is.
50 plus years of work on my part being reclassified as science fiction is as good as canceling it. Netflix did not reclassify it as science fiction, but archaeology, the Society for American Archaeology, says that it really sees no evidence for an advanced lost civilization of the Ice Age.
Yes.
And that it's simply, my series is simply entertainment with ideological goals. So I want to get into the parts of the world that that archaeology has not looked at that have been.
It's kind of interesting, though, from that statement, just the last thing. Contrary to Hancock's claims, archaeology does not willfully ignore credible evidence. nor does it seek to suppress it in a conspiratorial fashion. You know, but we just showed that.
Yeah, we just showed in the case of Tom Dillehay that his evidence was suppressed.
Tom,
but in the case
up.
Of Jacques Cinq-Mars, his evidence was suppressed, that archaeology was not open-minded about the work of these guys, that they suffered humiliation and great difficulty in advancing their work. And furthermore, I'd like to make another point clear at this point, Flynn.
So that's the clip, in a sense, and this is something that Graham Hancock and others repeat repeatedly, that suppressing your work in a conspiratorial fashion is akin to the arguments that archaeologists make against pseudoscientists and claims for ancient aliens in Atlantis and stuff like that. I'm wondering what you think about this, having lived through some of this and thinking about the milieu of culture. Yeah.
This is the guy he mentioned?
Yeah, this is Tom Dillehay, who he just mentioned. And so this is Dillehay's response. Dillehay had no idea he was mentioned in this Joe Rogan debate. He didn't even know much about Graham Hancock or anything. So I told him about this before I interviewed him about the recent dating controversy about Monteverde, and he agreed to respond to it. And so here's his response, because it's just so funny. Culture today and pseudoscience and whatnot.
Well, I can't comment on Atlantis and pseudoscience. I know very little about I would not say that the data at Monteverde has been suppressed. That's not the word I would use. Mm-hmm. I'd say it's been heavily criticized in publications. Sure. And since it's been published by others, and also let's stay off the negative a second. There's been a tremendous amount of support and positivism about Monteverde too. Okay.
So there's been criticism.
So this is how it's supposed to work.
Now let's see what Tom Dillehay had to say when he wasn't trying to be positive about the situation.
And another colleague who sent a letter to the newspaper in Chile, one of the major newspapers, saying that Monteverde was creation of the CIA to implant me down there. And, you know, that puts you and your family in a dangerous situation in a country like that at that time. So there were several other unpleasant things. So the whole sociology of the non-scientific part of that enterprise was disturbing at times and made me reveal that there's a small, not a majority, but a minority of people who will do anything in their power to defend their paradigm.
Funny Flint pretends this isn't a thing. It's almost like he rewrites history in order to change the narrative and the way that it's perceived by the public. Almost like he's engaging in an ideological war instead of, you know, educating the public about science.
Exactly.
If you publish a paper that shocks the consensus, you're going to get a bunch of criticism because they think this is the consensus. They think you're wrong. And then you present counter evidence, and then people go, oh shit, he's right. And then you get support. That's how you change the consensus. I even brought this up in the debate. This is normal.
Neil seems to be forgetting the discussion we had in the debate itself. This goes way beyond regular skepticism and scrutiny.
Another thing is, like, people, there's this whole thing, like, scholars to be an academic, you have to follow, tote the line. But like every single scholar I ever met personally is actively trying to reverse some sort of status quo. They're trying to become famous. They're trying to discover something that's brand new. They're trying to push back dates. They're trying to prove something wrong. That's the whole point of a dissertation, is to debunk something. That's how this whole thing keeps moving. So I just think it's kind of odd that you hear a lot, I'm not saying you guys say this, but you hear this all the time, that scholarship is just there to keep the status quo. And I think it's the exact opposite.
I wouldn't say that it's there to keep the status quo, but I would say that, like we saw it with Clovis first, and for the people that think that that's just a one-off, man, you go back to, there was a guy, Ailes Hyde Rilke, who was a Smithsonian Institute anthropologist back in the early days, and he was, same thing, if you posit it, it's even in the Wikipedia page, if you posit that there was peopling of the Americas that happened before about 3,000 years ago, you could kiss your academic career goodbye. And the Wikipedia page, if I remember the exact quote, is something along the lines of, it made it virtually impossible for anybody to have a successful career in anthropology if they believed that. And this is,
I have a hard time believing that.
Can you scroll down just a hair, Ryan, down a little bit further? Great. Up a little bit at the bottom of that. Okay. In early 1900, Ailes Hydrickla and William Henry Holmes of the Smithsonian Institute became the chief and made it virtually taboo for any archaeologist desirous of a successful career to advocate for a deep antiquity of the inhabitants of the Americas.
Now, this is a huge issue, one that's plagued archaeology in the Americas for at least 100 years and shows no signs of slowing down. When we have people in positions of power that are more concerned with the optics than they are with the actual data being portrayed, it's going to be pretty difficult for us to get a fair shake out of these people. And I mean, I do not find it an overt or an over-the-top comparison to say that this is akin to a priest that we trust with our kids violating that trust. We have given you accolades and money and status, and you are using it to promote your own agendas instead of actually educating the public. I mean, these two clowns should be talking about Pokemon, all right? They should be on a Logan Paul podcast talking about freaking nacho cheese and that kind of bullshit. They have no... This is a perfect example. They clearly should not be allowed near any sort of scientific discourse. Making mistakes is fine. Making mistakes and not owning them is not fine. Making a mistake on the fly like that and leaving it in a video so we could all see that... Flint Dibble, you're always going to be a joke in my book, my friend. Always. Well, thank you very much for watching. If you look below, there's links to support the channel. I'm going to be in Austin for the Quest for Ancient Civilizations conference again. This one's going to be a lot bigger. Check out the links down below to get your tickets and to see all the ins and outs of what's going on there so far. Thank you very much, and I hope to see you next time.